is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On the morning of February 24th, 2023, just after 8 a.m., Fairfax County Police responded to a 911 call from a house on a place called Stable Brookway in Herndon, Virginia. What they found inside that upstairs bedroom is a kind of crime scene that stays with you, to put it lightly. If you're wondering what the whole story is on this case, you found the right place. We're going to go through all of the details from the prosecution to the defense in a very eye-opening way, I would say. There's a lot of caveats to this case. It is not quite as open as shut as one may think, or as one may have been led to believe based on what you may have watched on this case out there. I just want you to hear it all so you can digest it and make your decisions that way. So stick around. We're going to go through all of the aspects of this case as this trial is set to begin this week. We'll be carrying it for you right here on our podcast channels, the audio channels. If you want to listen to the trial, be sure to press subscribe wherever it is you're listening to us right now so you don't miss any of that. If you're on YouTube, press subscribe as well. We'll keep giving you updates every single day on this case as the trial progresses. And I'd love to get your thoughts. Comment section there on YouTube. You can weigh in. And also, if you want to talk directly with me in a more condensed chat, be sure to check out our Substack. It's absolutely free to join right now, and that's where you can conversate directly with me on there. So please do join us on Substack. The link is in the description. It's hiddenkillers.substack.com. Okay, you ready? You're ready to dig into this? You're ready to go through this crazy, crazy story? Because it is exactly that. Take a sip of tea. Yeah, Hootie Mug. I saw him last summer. Kind of an okay show. Anyway, Christine Banfield, 37 years old, was lying on the bed. She's naked. She'd been stabbed multiple times in the neck and upper body. She was still alive when officers arrived, barely though, and would be pronounced dead at the hospital a short time later. Feet away from her, on the floor, was Joseph Ryan. He was 39, fully clothed. He had been shot twice, once in the head near his right eyebrow and once in the chest. It's important to note it was two different gunshots, two different shooters. He was dead at the scene. The room was covered in blood. A knife was there, two firearms, a bag of what police would later describe as fetish accessories scattered around the room. Downstairs in the basement, officers found the Banfield's four-year-old daughter, jacket zipped, backpack on her shoulder. She'd been waiting to go to the zoo. Two people called 911 that morning. Both were in the house when the police arrived. Both claimed they had shot the intruder in self-defense. Two people shooting. He's carrying around guns? I don't know. Nearly 3 years later, one of them is now about to stand trial for murder. The other already pled guilty to manslaughter, and starting Monday, she's expected to testify against him. It's going to be interesting. It's not without incentive for her to testify against him, the au pair, to testify against Brendan Banfield. We're going to go through all of this. It's scheduled to last for 4 weeks. Cameras will be allowed in the courtroom. And by the time it's over, the jury will have to decide whether this was an elaborate murder conspiracy disguised as self-defense or a horrific morning that got pinned on the wrong people. Here's everything you need to know about what is going on. Before we get into the allegations of the affair, the fetish website, the disputed forensics, let's talk about the two people who aren't here to tell their side of the story. Christine Ann Banfield was a pediatric intensive care nurse in Inova Fairfax Hospital, but that only tells you part of who she was. Before moving to Virginia, she worked in New York as a sexual assault nurse examiner, a sane nurse, as it's called. That's one of the hardest jobs in medicine. These are the nurses who provide emergency care to assault survivors, collects forensic evidence, and testify in court when those cases go to trial. Christine was certified in both adult and pediatric forensic examination. She spent years helping people on the worst days of their lives. She was also a mother. Her daughter was 4 years old when Christine was killed. That little girl, like I said, in the basement of their house while their mother was being stabbed to death, one floor above. Joseph Nathan Ryan, he was 39, from Springfield, Virginia, a Fairfax County native. His mother, Deidre Fisher, described him as an animal lover and her best friend. "I loved him so much," she told reporters after his death. "I can't really tell you the level of our friendship. Not everybody gets to have that as a parent, and I was blessed." By all accounts, Joseph Ryan had never met the Banfields before February 24th, 2023. He showed up at that house believing he was walking into a consensual encounter with a woman he'd been chatting with online for weeks. According to prosecutors, he had no idea he was walking into a trap. It's got to be a weird one to square up for mom. "I can't really tell you the level of our friendship. Not everybody gets to have that as a parent. I was blessed with knowing that the last thing your son did was show up to a woman's house to reenact an SA scene." At least that's what he had in his mind was going on. It's got to be a weird one. Might take some of the warm and fuzzies away from that relationship. When someone's like into that. These are the victims: a nurse who spent a career helping assault survivors, a man looking for connection who ended up dead on a stranger's bedroom floor, if that's what you want to call looking for connection. Whatever happened in that house, whatever the jury decides, these two people, that's who they were. Now, let's talk about what the prosecution says happened, because the theory they're presenting to the jury is something out of a crime novel, and they're betting Brendan Banfield's life on it. According to prosecutors, Brendan Banfield was having an affair with the family's live-in au pair, a Brazilian woman named Juliana Perez Magalhães. She had moved to the United States in October of 21 to work for the Banfield family, helping care for their daughter. She was 23 years old when she was arrested. The affair allegedly began around August of 22, about a year into her employment. Juliana had since provided a detailed statement to prosecutors as part of her plea deal. According to her account, Brendan told her in October 2022 that he wanted his wife out of the picture. This is according to her. When she asked if he meant divorce, he allegedly said no. He was thinking about finding a way to get rid of her. Prosecutors allege that Brendan then created a fake profile on a website called FetLife, a dating platform for people into kink, BDSM, and sexual fetishes. The profile used Christine's photo and was allegedly created on her laptop without her knowledge. The account connected with Joseph Ryan, who believed he was arranging a consensual encounter involving knife play and an SA fantasy scenario. According to the prosecution's theory, Ryan wasn't a random intruder. He was a patsy. Someone who could be lured into the house, killed and blamed for Christine's murder, allowing Brendan and Juliana to walk away looking like heroes who shot an attacker in self-defense. Here's how prosecutors say it went down on the morning of February 24th. Christine had purchased zoo tickets for Juliana to take her daughter out that morning. According to Juliana's account, Brendan was supposedly staked out at a nearby McDonald's, pretending to be at work, but actually waiting for the bat signal. Ryan arrived at the house expecting to find Christine alone, ready for the fantasy encounter that had allegedly been arranged online. He entered the bedroom. Christine was sleeping. And if you believe the prosecution, she had no idea he was coming. She had no idea who he was. She had no idea any of this even existed. He began what he thought was the agreed-upon scenario, restraining her at knife point. So he's thinking this is part, if the prosecution's theory is true, he's thinking he's doing what he was asked to do. She thinks she's being restrained at knife point by a strange intruder into her home. I mean, think of the horror of that. And then according to prosecutors, Brendan and Juliana burst in. Brendan allegedly shot Ryan first with his IRS service weapon. He was a federal criminal investigator for the IRS. Then Juliana allegedly fired the second shot with a Glock that Brendan had purchased just weeks earlier. Prosecutors say Brendan then stabbed his wife to death because, you know, the gunshot didn't work enough. The cover story came next. Both Brendan and Juliana told police the same thing, that they had come home unexpectedly, found an intruder attacking Christine, and shot him in defense of her life. This is where it doesn't make a ton of sense. Two people, two different guns, and then stabbing? Huh? They have a whole different story. We'll get to that in a minute. Juliana called 911 three times that morning, hanging up twice before completing the third call. Interesting. Brendan took the phone and told the dispatcher, "I just shot a man. He was attacking my wife." Prosecutors point to several pieces of evidence they say support this theory. Police found framed photos of Brendan and Juliana together on a master bedroom nightstand taken after the alleged affair began. Records show the two visited a gun range together about 2 months before the murders. Brendan purchased the Glock that Juliana allegedly used to fire the fatal shot. Blood spatter analysis, prosecutors say, suggest Ryan wasn't standing over Christine with a knife when he was shot. He was allegedly in the corner of the room, possibly on his knees. That's the prosecution's case. An IRS agent and his young mistress allegedly conspiring to take out his wife and frame an innocent man for the crime. It's elaborate. It's disturbing. And if Juliana's testimony holds up, it could send Brendan Banfield to prison for life. But here's where it gets complicated. The prosecution has a problem, and his name is Brendan Miller. Miller is a digital forensics expert with the Fairfax County Police Department. He was assigned to analyze the electronic evidence in this case. 60 devices in total, including phones, laptops, account records. His job was to figure out who was actually behind that FetLife photo and that profile. Who was communicating with Joseph Ryan? Who arranged for him to come to that house? Should tell us a lot, right? If it's a fake account and it's something that the husband was doing on his devices and such, that would look pretty bad. That would be like, oh God, this is really sick and weird. You planned this whole damn thing out, didn't you? Well, Miller's conclusion, documented in an executive summary, directly contradicts the prosecution's catfishing theory. Yeah. According to Miller's analysis, Christine Banfield appeared to be the one controlling the FetLife account, not her husband. His report states there is no indication that Christine lost control of her device during this time. He noted that Christine had a pattern of being active on her devices during the relevant times over the year leading up to this period. He found that the FetLife account was created using Christine's phone and a photo she had previously texted to her husband. And here's a finding that really complicates things. Miller wrote that Joe is not the only person Christine was making plans with on FetLife, who received her Telegram username. According to his analysis, Christine was communicating with multiple people on that site. She was giving out her encrypted messaging handle. And critically, Miller found that Brendan's Samsung devices do not appear on any legal process returns as hardware profile associated with these accounts. In plain English, the department's own forensic expert looked at the digital evidence and concluded that Christine, not Brendan, was the one using that account. Facts don't lie. Miller's findings were peer-reviewed, too, by the University of Alabama. He's got to make sure, you know, you don't want to like, well, this guy, this is his interpretation. We've seen data interpreted different ways before. Let's get another set of eyes on this, shall we? University of Alabama. They confirmed his conclusions. And then, you know, if you're an investigator on this case, you find this out, you're like, oh my God, this is a total twist. This is not what I was expecting. This is not what I thought the direction we were going. We must retool. We must figure this out better, further. Well, according to court testimony, Deputy Chief Patrick Brush, who oversaw the Major Crimes Bureau at the time, told Miller he would never be doing another digital forensics case again in that bureau. He was then transferred out of digital forensics in late 2024. The lead homicide detective on the case, Kyle Bryant, who also reportedly disagreed with command staff's theory, was transferred off the case as well. So now we allegedly have a pattern of people who are finding actual evidence in this case, pieces of information, pieces of data, pieces of potentially exculpatory evidence, bringing it to the table. And then, we're sorry, you didn't tell us what we wanted to hear. Bye-bye. Not a little sus or anything, is it? Defense Attorney John Carroll put it this way. It is a theory in search of facts rather than a series of facts supporting a theory. And maybe it is. We'll flesh that all out in court and see exactly what all of this means. Maybe it really was a really bad phone dump, a really bad examination of the digital forensics. Maybe. I mean, that can happen. You can go, you're never going to do this again. You did a really bad job. But you can't be saying that simply because the data doesn't line up with what you thought it might be. And that is important, and that needs to be looked at. Does it create reasonable doubt? Well, if it is exactly how it is laid out, I would say certainly. If this is being expressed a certain way before court by certain parties, and it's maybe not quite as accurate as they're spinning it, well, then, you know, maybe not. Again, we'll have to wait for trial. Luckily, it's about to begin. Judge Penny Ascrate found Miller's transfer concerning enough to order prosecutors to hand over all communications related to his reassignment. She said on the record, the transfer that gives the court pause is Miller's because it relates to the theory of this case. When prosecutors were asked about the competing theories within the department, Deputy Commonwealth's Attorney Eric Klingen acknowledged something remarkable. With 12 different homicide detectives, he said, there were 24 different theories. The theory only narrowed to one, he admitted, after Juliana provided her account. Again, we see this all too often. Path of least resistance. And sometimes that's the right path to go down. But if you're just going down the path of least resistance, someone telling you exactly what you want to hear, ignoring evidence you don't want to see, and going with that narrative that you already expressed publicly before having the evidence that may say otherwise, it puts you in a precarious position. And unfortunately, with a lot of law enforcement, we see not necessarily introspection and maybe changing some things up, maybe going, maybe I was wrong. Those are words we don't ever really hear from law enforcement. Maybe I was wrong. Good luck getting that. So that's worth sitting with. The prosecution is acknowledging that their case didn't crystallize until their star witness decided to cooperate. Which brings us to the biggest question this jury will have to answer. Can Julia Perez Mangalas be believed? The prosecution's entire case rises or falls on Juliana's credibility. Without her testimony, they have circumstantial evidence, an affair, some gun range visits, and a digital forensic report from their own expert that contradicts their theory. With her, they have a detailed, damning account of Brendan allegedly masterminding every aspect of the murder plot. But here's the problem. Juliana's story changed. On the day of the killings, She and Brendan told police the same thing. They came home, found Ryan attacking Christine, and shot him in self-defense. Her body cam interview from that morning shows her panicked, hyperventilating, telling officers her friend was hurt. That account doesn't match what she later told prosecutors. For nearly a year, Juliana sat in jail, facing second-degree murder charges. She was looking at serious prison time. She was looking at never seeing her family in Brazil again. And then, after Brendan was finally arrested in September of 24, everything changed. Within days of his indictment, Juliana took a plea deal. And let's talk about that deal. She was originally charged with second-degree murder. She pled guilty to manslaughter. The maximum sentence is 10 years. But what prosecutors are actually recommending is time served, meaning she walks free, followed by deportation to Brazil. Her sentencing was deliberately scheduled after Brendan's trial. Prosecutors specifically requesting that timing, the court record show, to ensure she continues to cooperate. Why might they have concern about that? Oh, she's made some weird comments. If she testifies against Brendan Banfield, she goes home. If she doesn't, well, she'll probably be in prison for the rest of her life. If you're Juliana, what do you think Juliana's going to do? Juliana wrote a letter to her mother from the Fairfax County Jail. It's been also entered into evidence. It's another gem. Quote, "I'm just so upset and heartbroken for doing this to Brendan," she wrote. "I love him and he loves me too. I have no doubts, but it's the right thing to do for you. I want to be with you again." This to her mother. "It's the right thing to do for you. I want to be with you again." So she's putting her own interests ahead of what? The truth? I don't know. That's up for interpretation. She's not saying she's telling the truth because it's the truth. She's saying she's doing this to go home to her mother. Defense attorneys have already telegraphed their strategy. Juliana has every incentive to fabricate, and she does. Every reason to say exactly what prosecutors want her to say. Her entire future depends on Brendan Banfield being convicted. That's not a neutral witness. That's a cooperator whose freedom is tied directly to the outcome of this trial. The question for the jury is simple. Do you believe a woman who changed her story after a year in jail, who is being promised her freedom in exchange for testimony, who wrote that she was heartbroken to be doing this to the man she still loves? And it's not just the star witness that's been a problem for the prosecution. The case itself has been chaos behind the scenes, despite the salaciousness of what they'd like you to believe. And it may be that the salaciousness is true. But it is important to take a closer look now, isn't it? Eric Klingon was the senior assistant Commonwealth's attorney leading this case. He was the one who took Juliana's proffer. He was the one building the prosecution's theory. He was supposed to be the one presenting it to the jury. Then on August 8th of 2025 at 8 a.m., Fairfax County Police responded to a call from an employee at an animal hospital in Centerville. The caller told police a man was drinking beer and smoking cigarettes in the parking lot outside his car. The caller said he'd seen the guy doing the same thing almost every day. When officers arrived, they found Eric Klingon, the lead prosecutor in one of Fairfax County's highest profile murder cases, drinking at 8 in the morning on his way into work. The officer's words on the body cam footage.
This is Commonwealth's attorney that's drunk.
Klingon acknowledged the moment. "This looks terrible," he told officers, "and I get it." He was cited for drinking in public, a class 4 misdemeanor. The charges were later dismissed after he completed court requirements. But Klingon has been removed from the Banfield case. He's on leave. A new prosecution team is taking over just weeks before trial. The evidence battles have been equally messy. Prosecutors wanted to use a forensic interview with Banfield's daughter. She was 4 years old at the time, and she was in the house when her mother was killed. Judge Askaret ruled it inadmissible. The defense moved to dismiss the entire indictment and removed Klingon from the case, arguing he improperly guided Juliana during her proffer interview. Both motions were denied, but the arguments are on the record at a pretrial hearing just days ago. The defense asked the judge to exclude the words homicide from the autopsy report that will be shown to the jury. The prosecution didn't object. This is the state of the case as it now gets ready to go to trial. The lead prosecutor removed after a public drinking incident. Key evidence excluded. The department's own forensic expert contradicting the core theory, and a star witness whose credibility the defense is prepared to destroy. There's one more thing that should bother you about this case, regardless of what you believe happened: the timeline. Christine Banfield and Joseph Ryan were killed on February 24th of 23. Both Brendan and Juliana initially told police the same story. Home invasion, self-defense. It took 8 months to arrest the au pair. It took 19 months, a year and a half, to charge Brendan. Why? Well, the catfishing theory was solid from the start. If the evidence clearly pointed to an elaborate murder conspiracy, why did it take that long? Why did prosecutors need Juliana to flip before they could indict him? Why did the case sit for 19 months with no charges against the husband? The defense's answer is pretty straightforward: because the evidence didn't support the theory. Like it or not, it didn't. They needed someone to tell the story for them because the actual digital data did not. And they got that someone only after she'd spent a year in jail facing murder charges and was offered a deal to go home. So here's what you should be watching as this trial unfolds over the next 4 weeks. First, Juliana's testimony. This is everything. If she holds up under cross-examination, if her account comes across as credible, despite the obvious incentives, the prosecution has a path to conviction. If the defense can shred her credibility, highlight the changed story, the sweetheart deal, the letter to her mother, reasonable doubt enters the room. Second, the digital forensics. Will Officer Brendan Miller testify? How will prosecutors explain his findings? How will they explain his transfer? The defense is going to hammer this. The state's own expert said the evidence pointed to Christine, not Brendan. That's not something you can hand wave away. And third, the blood spatter analysis. Prosecutors say it contradicts the self-defense narrative that Ryan was shot in the corner of the room, possibly on his knees, not standing over Christine with a knife. The defense will challenge this. Expect competing expert testimony. That's always fun. Hey, jury, here's two experts on the exact same thing. One's going to tell you one thing, one's going to tell you another. We're going to keep calling them experts, even though they're completely contradicting each other. Good luck. Fourth, Brendan's silence. He hasn't spoken publicly about any of this. He invoked the Fifth Amendment when called to testify at earlier hearings. Will he take the stand? Almost certainly not. Defendants rarely do in murder cases, but his silence will hang over the courtroom. Fifth, the affair evidence. The photos on the nightstand, the gun range visits, the Glock purchase. It's damning. It establishes motive. We know they had an affair, but does it prove murder? Having an affair isn't a crime. Buying a gun isn't a crime. The prosecution needs to connect these dots to an actual conspiracy, not just being immoral or a shitty human being. Six, Christine's FetLife activity. This might be the most uncomfortable aspect of the trial. If the defense can establish that Christine was genuinely using that site, that she was communicating with multiple people, that she may have arranged Ryan's visit herself, the catfishing theory collapses. It doesn't mean she deserved what happens. It doesn't mean Brendan is innocent, but it blows a hole in the prosecution's narrative that he created the account without her knowledge. Let me tell you what Brendan Banfield is facing. Four counts of aggravated murder. Two victims, but multiple legal theories for each. One count of use of a firearm in commission of a felony, child abuse and neglect charges with his daughter because she was in the house when they occurred, and if convicted, he faces life in prison. The trial's about to start. Scheduled to run for weeks. We're going to follow it for you day by day, week by week, and bring you updates throughout. Judge Penny Askeret is presiding, the same judge who handled the Johnny Depp Amber Heard defamation trial. Yeah. Cameras are allowed in the courtroom, so you'll be able to watch this unfold in real time. Two people walked in that Herndon bedroom on February 24th, 2023, and shot Joseph Ryan. Both of them pulled triggers. Both of them initially claimed it was self-defense. One of them changed her story after a year in jail and got a deal that lets her walk free if she testifies. The other has said nothing and now faces life in prison. The prosecution says this was a calculated murder plot, months in the making, designed to look like self-defense. They say Brendan Banfield created that fake profile, lured an innocent man to his house, used him as a scapegoat, and murdered his wife so he could be with his young mistress. Wow, that is a plot. And maybe it's true. The defense says the prosecution's own forensic expert proved otherwise and got transferred for his trouble. They say the star witness is a liar who will say anything to go home. They say this investigation locked onto a theory before the evidence supported it and pushed anyone who disagreed away. The lead prosecutor was removed after being found drinking at 8 a.m. The digital forensic expert was transferred after contradicting command staff. The lead detective was moved off the case. Key evidence has been excluded, and the whole thing took nearly 3 years to get to trial. Starting Monday, or today, if you're watching it here on Monday, 12 people have to sort through all of this and decide what actually happened in that bedroom. Christine Banfield was a nurse who spent her career helping assault survivors. She was a mother. She was only 37 years old. Joseph Ryan was a man looking for connection who walked into a house who never should have entered. He was 39. Both are dead. Somebody did this. Somebody is responsible. The question this jury has to answer is whether the evidence proves beyond a reasonable doubt that it was Brendan Banfield. Brendan has pled not guilty and maintains his innocence. All individuals are presumed innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. I'd really love to hear what your thoughts are on this case. Let us know in the comments section on YouTube or on our Substack channel. It's absolutely free on Substack right now for a limited time, so please join us over there. You can communicate with us directly here in the studio on our Substack. Please check it out. If you want to interact directly with me and have a conversation on these cases, come on over there and have it. The link is in the description. It's hiddenkillers.substack.com. And if you'd like access to all of our the episodes, everything ad-free, all that, Substack. Check it out. The link is right there. Please press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us, whether it's on YouTube or on the podcast platform, Apple Podcast. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi is what you search. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. We do greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for all of us, I am Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.